Samuel Lee.
Thank you. Thank you for once again letting me present to you. And the only reason I can present to you is I get to represent you in Jefferson City, which is a great honor and privilege, which I've done for many, many years. I got to start this timer here because Marsha gave me a time limit. So at 23 minutes, I'm stopping, but I do get 30 minutes. So we're going to do some questions and answers or comments. So I'm going to jump right into it. I apologize, I don't have a PowerPoint this year because I told Marsha this talk is a work in progress, which means I'm still working on it this morning. But there are five things I want to cover in the next 25-30 minutes or so. And that is, first of all, pro-life legislation that was enacted in 2021, pro-life legislation which was defeated in 2021. Thirdly, looking ahead to possible pro-life legislation in 2022. Fourth, we are at the crossroads, and I'll explain more on that later. And fifth, of course, is what you can do to help. Okay? So I'm going to jump right into it here. And also, if you see this handout, will you please pass it around? I'll get to this in about 10-15 minutes or so. Okay? And there should be plenty of copies at the table. I'll explain what that is. All right, thank you. So the big legislation this past year were two bills dealing with adoption, foster care, and tax credits. House Bill 430, which was sponsored by Representative Hannah Kelly from Mountain Grove, and the bill's handled by Senator Holly Rader from Sykes, Missouri. It amends and extends the maternity home tax credit. How many people here are with maternity homes? Just raise your hand. All right, so you should be aware, of course, of the tax credit. And what we did in this bill is to, first of all, make the maternity home tax credit permanent. As those been around for a while know that every 4 to 6 years or so, we would scramble to try to get these reauthorized. It raised the redemption from 50% to 70%, which of course is now like we do on the Pregnancy Resource Center tax credit. It removed the cap. So we had a $3.5 million cap. So it removed the cap, the annual cap on tax credits, so that it is now matches the Pregnancy Resource Center tax credit changes that we made in 2019. And I am hearing anecdotally, since that went in on July 1st of this year, the Pregnancy Resource Center tax credit, that some of the agencies have had increased donations. Is that correct? Yeah. So if you had fundraisers since then, so I've heard that from a few people. So that's the intent here, and that's the intent of lawmakers, is to give you another tool to raise money. So for those maybe few people here who aren't familiar with these state income tax credits, and if you aren't familiar, get yourself familiar with them and tie into that right away. There's plenty of agencies will tell you how important it is. In addition to your federal tax deduction and your state tax deduction, when someone donates to your charitable organization, we have in Missouri a state income tax credit, which now is 70%. So if you have a donor who donates $1,000, they get $700 back on their state income tax if that is their tax liability, okay? It has been a godsend for agencies. The Alliance for Life was involved in getting the Pregnancy Resource Center tax credit back in the, 2006, I think, 2007, right around then. And the problem has been we run out of money each year. So we removed that cap in 2019 for the PRC tax credit. We're doing exactly the same thing with the maternity home tax credit. So I'm very grateful to lawmakers that they did that. In addition, this bill provides the same tax credit for people who donate to domestic violence shelters and for the first time rape crisis centers. So starting July 1 of next year, those increases and removal of the cap will go into effect. So I know that your donors are asking, particularly right before Christmas time, if you have any tax credits left, this time next year, you will say yes, because there are will no longer be any limits on these tax credits. So that bill was passed unanimously in the House, and all but one senator in the Senate voted for it. So every senator except for one voted for that, which shows how much our state lawmakers love you. And I really mean that. They really, really like the work that you're doing. in providing housing and shelter for pregnant moms, for the services you're providing. The other bill that passed this year was House Bill 429, and if you're involved in any way with adoption or foster care, for the first time, we now had a foster care tax deduction. So this would be for each household that takes in one or more foster children, you can get up to $5,000 a state tax deduction for those other expenses that come about. I know that if you are having someone, a child in foster care, that the state pays for that, but the reality is you get that call in the middle of the night, pick up this kid, and you need to get a baby bed, you need to get a car seat, you need to get whatever it is, where you have that child in school and they need a uniform, or they need a book, or they need whatever it is, that's coming out of the pocket of the foster parents. The state's going to now provide a $5,000 state tax deduction. In addition, on our special needs adoption tax credit, which has been around since the 1980s, that has been changed to adoption tax credit. So all children who are adopted will be available, and no longer will be limited to just children from Missouri, but it'll be children who are adopted from other states or even from other countries. So there's a limit on that, but we'll see how that works. So that was what passed, along with the alternative abortion funding money, which was again at the $6.46 million level. Now that's the amount that we've been getting every year for the last 5 years. So Marsh and I talked a little bit about this, that maybe it's time to go back to the Department of Social Services and to the governor's office and say, you know what, we need a raise after 5 years. We need another $1 million or $2 million, because I know the Alliance and I know that other agencies outside the Alliance don't have enough money that they can send to agencies that would like to be part of their coalition. So that's our to-do list for this upcoming year. All right, so what was defeated or what failed in 2021? Pretty much everything else, okay? And it's not a surprise. We always have more pro-life bills that are filed than we have bills that pass each year. And this year was just a priority for adoption and foster care. And it was a particular priority for House Speaker Rob Vescovo, who's from Arnold, Missouri. He was in foster care when he was a child. He was adopted when he was a child. And this is something in his heart he wanted to do. So that's sort of been the pro-life focus for this year. And that makes sense. So what else failed? Well, pretty much everything else that's filed. And we have bills every year. One of the things that failed was during the regular session was an attempt to defund Planned Parenthood. I'm not going to get too much into the weeds, but for years and years, we've been defunding Planned Parenthood through the budget process. The Missouri Supreme Court ruled last year, you can't do that anymore, so we have to pass a bill to do that. It failed during the regular session. It did pass one body in the special session. There was a special session in June, and Representative Nick Shore from O'Fallon, Missouri, had a bill, House Bill 2, which is a comprehensive bill to defund Planned Parenthood. So not just defund Planned Parenthood in the Medicaid program, but also in any other non-Medicaid health program other than Title 10, because Title 10 funds don't flow through the state and we don't have control of that. It would also further protect our state Hyde Amendment and would allow taxpayers to sue government officials who attempt to force them to pay for abortions or force them to send money to abortion facilities and their affiliates and other organizations. So that passed in the House during the special session, 109-45. Unfortunately, the Senate didn't take it up. But again, pro-life House Speaker Rob Vescovo, this would be his last year in the House, he promised that we could get it done. We will get it done during the next regular session, which starts in January. So I anticipate that'll be one of the bills that we'll be dealing with next year. The other notable bill that failed, and thankfully so, was Senate Bill 391, which was called the Abolition of Abortion in Missouri Act. Sounds pretty good, right? Don't we all want to abolish abortion in Missouri? The problem is the way this was drafted, and it was introduced by a pro-life state senator. The way it was drafted, it would allow for women who have abortions to be charged and convicted of murder and could go to jail. And in fact, even the way it was drafted, they could get the death penalty like anyone else. So this was something that really got our attention, and we ended up having to testify against. And I know a number of agencies here during lobby day earlier this year went to their legislators and said, this is just not a good idea. As I told you then, and I'll tell everybody else, imagine if this were to become law, this would affect your ability to even counsel women. Because if someone came in and said, I'm thinking of having an abortion, which means I'm thinking of having someone have my baby killed, as mandated reporters, you'd be required to report that to, the hotline. You'd have to hotline that person at a minimum, maybe even call the police on that person. I would suspect that your clientele would dry up pretty quickly after that, if that was what you're required to do. Anyway, that was failed to pass, and we'll just see what happens next year. All right, moving on to looking ahead to possible pro-life legislation in 2022. As I mentioned, defunding of Planned Parenthood will be at the top of the list because the House did pass it through the special session. There's a promise there. The Senate is also considering a limited defunding of Planned Parenthood within the Medicaid arena. Senator Bill White from Joplin, he's promised to try to get that done, and we'll see how that goes. Other legislators want to introduce a Texas-style heartbeat bill, which has been very much in the news recently. And I just be upfront with you, I'm not a big fan of that legislation. And I've publicly stated my opposition to that. And the reason is what it establishes in the law. And what that bill establishes in the law is the right for private individuals to enforce state law by suing other people, okay? So this can be applied in all sorts of areas, including those in other states who want to go after pro-lifers. You probably all recall a few years ago, it's been probably 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, the state of California passed a law which would require pregnancy centers, among other things, to counsel and refer for abortion. And this went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, okay? And the U.S. Supreme Court struck that down. Well, imagine if California said, we're going to pass the same law, but we're not going to let any state officials enforce it. We're going to let private citizens enforce that. And anybody who doesn't like the idea that a pregnancy center is not referring women for abortions, they can get sued and get $10,000 in fines and get enjoined and things like that. I think we'd all be very, very unhappy if that were to occur. Other people have talked about what does this do about guns and other things. Those aren't my issues. So I'm going to stay in our lane here, which is pro-life. I think in principle that it's just a bad idea, and we'll just see what the U.S. Supreme Court does. So, it'll be introduced in Missouri. We'll see how much traction it gets. We have lots of leftover bills, what I call leftover bills. We have the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. We've been trying to pass that for a few years. And that not only requires that any baby who's born alive after an abortion has to be given the same care as any other child who's born, but it would also provide enhanced causes of action against anybody who unlawfully performed or induced an abortion. And unlawfully could be a wide variety of things. It could be providing abortion pills that you bought on the internet and giving it to somebody. And if that were to cause injury to someone, it enhances the possibility of lawsuits and penalties against that person. Or someone does a late-term abortion, and it's not for the very strict physical health reasons. That would be an unlawful abortion. It could be an abortion doctor who doesn't wait 72 hours. Of course, we have the 72-hour waiting period here in Missouri. That would be an unlawful abortion, and this law would also allow someone to go after that if the woman was injured or died, or if the baby is injured or died, which happens in most abortions, the child dies. So it's an enhanced Born-Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. It'll be reintroduced, see if we can get some traction on it again. The other bill is called the Safeguarding All Children's Remains to Ensure Dignity Act, or SACRED Act. And this would ban the hoarding of aborted human remains. It would require the remains of babies who are aborted have to be buried or cremated and not just disposed of as common waste. As part of the informed consent process, the woman would have to be told that this is what shall happen to her, the remains of her child, or she has to make that decision ahead of time. It's gotten some criticism, and I understand that. It also requires that remains have to be transferred to a licensed funeral establishment for burial or cremation, or to the woman for final disposition. Anyway, those are some of the bills we're going to at least talk about next year, certainly get introduced. But we're at a crossroads in the pro-life movement. This comes as no surprise to any of you. Legally, for sure, not just so much with the Texas law, which has been in the news, but more so with the Mississippi law. It's called the Dobbs case, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. And that's a bill that Mississippi passed a few years ago that bans most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. And the U.S. Supreme Court is going to hear oral arguments on that on December 1st and is going to make a decision by end of June or early July of next year whether to uphold that law, and not only to uphold that law, but whether they're going to scale back, if not outright reverse Roe versus Wade and subsequent decisions in that decision. I anticipate upholding Mississippi law. I think everybody else thinks so. The question is, how much further along do they go? Well, this has all sorts of implications for here in Missouri, because as you know, we have a bill that we passed in 2019, House Bill 126, the Missouri Stand for the Unborn Act. It's also called the Missouri Heartbeat Bill, which is now in the courts. It's in the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals, ruling any day, or could be months from now, who knows. And the provisions in that bill, as you may recall, prohibits any abortion if the unborn child is diagnosed with Down syndrome. And it also has a tiered or cascading ban of most abortions at 8, then 14, then 18, then 20 weeks of pregnancy. And so what happens with the Mississippi case, the Dobbs case, is going to have huge implications for what happens with the Missouri law. In addition, if in the Dobbs case, they do reverse Roe versus Wade, part of House Bill 126 includes a trigger law, which has not been challenged. A trigger which only goes into effect upon essentially reversal of Roe versus Wade, that would ban all abortions from conception or essentially all abortions. And if the Supreme Court issues a broad ruling, you can see by late June or early July of next year that trigger law going into effect. Okay, so this is some pretty big stuff going on here. However. And this is where this handout comes in play here. So I'd like you to just take a look at that. And I want to talk about that. Let's say that, best case scenario, Roe versus Wade is overturned, and abortions are outlawed in Georgia. Okay? So what practical effect will that have on abortion practice in Georgia? And I'm going to have you take a look at the side. Take a look at the side that has the, they call them a stacking column graph, I think that's what it's called, okay? So the green is the number of, all these are Missouri residents who got abortions in their respective last 10 or 11 years, okay? The green, which is the bottom, are Missouri residents who got abortions in Kansas. And Kansas has the most current of all the states. So you can see for the last, since 2015, it's been averaging about 3,000 to 3,200 women each year leave Missouri and go to Kansas to have abortions. Pretty stable, unfortunately. I mean, there wasn't a decrease in 2010, but it's pretty much staying the same. The middle is Illinois. And you can see there was some variances. 2014, it says 712. It's probably an anomaly. Probably was higher than that, but these statistics are from the Centers for Disease Control. So that's for every year up to 2018. These are all CDC statistics. We can see those blue columns getting higher, particularly in 2018 and 2019, and we don't know yet what 2020 will hold, but they could be over 5,000 Missouri going to Illinois. So it had always been the case that out-of-state abortions, Kansas was the destination. Now it's Kansas and even more so Illinois. And then the red bar are the number of Missouri residents who obtained abortions in Missouri. And we don't have numbers for 2019 or 2020 yet. But if you look at that little chart above there, abortions in that box there, abortions performed, induced at reproductive health services of Planned Parenthood St. Louis, and it's not only Missouri residents, It says how many were performed in 2019, which was 1,368. So we know that number is not going to be much different than that. And then last year, there were 46. Only 46 abortions performed at outpatient clinics in Missouri. That's great news, right? Except, you look at that top line, that yellow line, which is the total number, and our numbers are not going down. You combine Kansas, Illinois, and a large number of Illinois, and a small number of Missouri, and we're still about that 9,000 to 9,200 women each year who are getting abortions. My friends, this is a big challenge for us, isn't it? You know, we passed a lot of laws that Planned Parenthood complains about, laws that have closed down every abortion clinic except one, laws that have basically shut down the last one, but they're just barely doing any so they can still say they have an abortion clinic open, staying open because of their heritage, staying open because they're still in this lawsuit against House Bill 126, so they have to remain open. But for all intents and purposes, we don't have abortions being performed or induced in Missouri anymore. Just a handful. This doesn't, those numbers there, 1,368 and 46 in 2020, don't include hospital abortions, but the numbers are at most 100 a year, hospital-based. So, role is reversed. Abortion is outlawed in Missouri. Or let's say it's partially reversed, and our eight-week ban is upheld, and we come in and pass more laws to restrict abortion. Where does that get us? Okay. I mean, it's gotten us to the point where I guess you could say abortion-free. I don't use that term, others do, but we still have a lot of women who are leaving the state. Okay? And you know where your clients are going or where they're coming from. The backside, this is a snapshot of from the Department of Health. Every year now they have to do a report on outpatient abortion facilities. Again, that's where that 46 came from. I would have you take a look at complications by abortion facility where abortion was performed. Reproductive Health Services had one. That makes sense. If they only did 46, they're not going to have that many complications. One that they reported, let's put it that way. Out-of-state facilities, 33. Unknown, 6. Essentially, all the women who are having complications in Missouri from abortions are getting them, are having complications that are being treated here from abortions they got from out-of-state. I'm just pointing that out to you because this is a problem. Out-of-state abortions is a problem. All this leads me to what other bills should we be doing? And we did file a bill earlier this year, and we're going to refile it. And that is something that no other state has attempted, that I'm aware of, and that is to regulate out-of-state abortions. And what the bill would do, of course, is first of all, say all of our pro-life laws will apply to any abortions that are done within the state. But they'll also apply if abortions or the abortion process is partially done in the state and partially done out of the state. So just think about that. Your client goes to Illinois or wants to go to Illinois or Kansas, and sorry, that's my alarm there. I have 7 minutes, okay? But they have to, but they will, let's say they get the drug induced abortion. Well, they're coming back here to Missouri. So already you have part of the abortion out of state and part of the abortion in state. And you know what? The law, I don't want to get into all the technicalities because it's a technical and difficult area. If you have part of a crime or part of activity occurs in one state, that state can go after you. That's basically what it is. So Senator Andrew Koenig, who's one of our big pro-life champions, filed that bill on our behalf. It's being reworked, and we're going to do that again. You know, if someone operates in Illinois, which Planned Parenthood of St. Louis does in Fairview Heights, but they're incorporated here in Missouri, which they are, and their doctors are residents and are licensed here in Missouri, then we maintain that the state of Missouri can have jurisdiction over them as well. It's really a question of jurisdiction. How do you get jurisdiction over somebody who does something out of state, but if they have connections to your home state or your foreign state, you can do that. I'm getting past the technical stuff just to tell you that this is, I think, where we have to, this is one area where we have to go. That's the first area. Secondly, it has to do with the importation into Missouri of abortion pills. Women are getting them on the internet. People are getting them and giving them to women from the internet. There's websites, Plan C, and they list a whole bunch of other places. And I don't know how many women are getting them. I don't know how many women are even interested in getting them. But it's very difficult to stop this. Again, we have to look at legislation like Senator Koenig passed, which would allow some jurisdiction over that activity. And lastly, if we have all these women who, despite all of the laws that we passed here in Missouri, 9,200 women a year, still having abortions, most of them, essentially all of them, out of state, how do we connect them better to your agencies? I'm not saying that this is your fault here. That's not the point I'm trying to make. Is what can the state of Missouri do? What can government do? What can we do to help you connect better to these women? I'm all ears. I mean, I'd like to know what it is so we can get these numbers to go back down again instead of just staying at that 9,200 level. Are there points of contact? You know, is there some way that when she buys a pregnancy test at the local dollar store, she can learn about the local pregnancy center? Maybe that needs to be her first point of contact. I don't know. Email, okay? You'll see at the bottom here, my email address. So I really want to hear what you think, what your ideas are. By the way, all this stuff I'm sending to Marcia, and you can email me, and I'll send you all these charts and my talk and all this stuff, because this is sort of the fire hose of information here. Lastly, if you've had women who've gone out of state and had abortions, or maybe took their first dose of their abortion pill out of state and came back for abortion pill reversal to your center, I would really like you to email me and tell me that story. Because if we're going to convince lawmakers that this is the next place we need to go, we need to have these stories. I'll give them these statistics, but they need stories. They need stories from your agencies, from your clients, and maybe from you personally, to come in next year, testify to committee, and say, this is what happened. This is what happened to our client. And now that Illinois is repealing their parental notification law, you're going to have more minors going out of state. And how many minors do you have coming to your centers or coming back injured from abortions they've had? And how many more will you have? So I'm sorry for going over my time a little bit, but we'll open it for five more minutes. Okay? Is that 10 or 5? 10 more minutes. Okay, all right. So I'm going to open it up for questions and answers on any topic, comments. And I don't, have you got microphones, or I'll just repeat the question? Can you just repeat the question? Just repeat the question. Anybody have any comments, questions, whatever, and or confusion? Yes, right here, yes.
Point of contact, what about all the young girls that are being taken to abortion centers from high school?
Okay, so the question is, the point of contact, what about all these girls who are being taken from...
That their parents aren't even notified.
And parents aren't even notified.
Aren't there bills being presented to make that illegal?
Well,
how do we combat that?
Is this a problem that girls in high school are being taken by school counselors to abortion clinics across state lines?
I don't know if that's true in Missouri, but I know that states
it is. I mean, if it is a problem, then we want to deal with that. So email me, okay? If you're hearing that, email me, because that could be dealt with by legislation. You know, I mean, they're committing a crime, and even they're taking them out of state. Again, part of that activity is occurring here within the state of Missouri. All right? Yes, more questions, comments, anything? Oh, come on. Oh, over there, yes.
I'm on the Kansas side. I'm actually over on Park.
Kansas side of Woodland Park, okay.
If it passes, if the state doesn't know,
Let me repeat what you said, everybody can hear, maybe you heard it before, I don't know, but here in Missouri, we need to tell our friends in Kansas to vote for the pro-life amendment, which will be on the ballot August of next year, I believe, okay? And the background there, the Kansas Supreme Court, 2-3 years ago, basically issued their Roe versus Wade decision in Kansas and found a right to abortion in the Kansas Constitution. Pulled it out of thin air, but you know, they did it. So the lawmakers have proposed a state constitutional amendment to overturn that and guarantee certainly no funding for abortion, I can recall, and the right to pass pro-life laws. I forget the exact language. If that passes, well, if it doesn't pass, then Kansas is going to, it doesn't make a difference what lawmakers keep passing, abortion is going to be lawfully protected. If it passes, and it's crucial that it passes, then they can enforce the laws they have now and possibly even pass, you know, outright bans or 6-week bans or 8-week bans or whatever they want to do, okay? So it's crucial that if you have contacts in Kansas, particularly as this gets closer and closer to when they're going to vote there, to get people out. These things are turnout issues. You know, you can look at the polls and say, well, you know, 52% here, 48% there. People don't, a lot of people don't vote in August. But if pro-life people vote in August, that can make all the difference in the world. Okay? Yes, more questions, comments?
What is the name of that bill?
You know,
Value them both.
That's right. Okay. All right. How are the Pregnancy Resource Center tax? Who's had a fundraiser since July 1 of this year? Just raise your hand, okay? How has it worked? I'm really curious if it's worked. And if it's not working, I want to know that too.
It worked really great.
It worked really great?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Thank you for that.
All right, good. So you got your donors aware that it's now 70%. Is that more of an incentive for them to give more?
Yes.
Okay, all right, good. Well, let's do what it should be doing. Yes, somewhere over here. Oh, right there. I see it. Okay.
I said phone call today for a donor looking at 50 to 100 grand because of the 70%.
Oh, 50 to 100 grand?
Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't say that donor's name out loud because you might have a lot of
people. Selfish side.
All right. Well, that's good. And that's what it's intended to do.
Yeah.
It's intended to for you to be able to raise more money so you can increase your mission and just do whatever you have to do to reach more women, to help more moms and babies, and I'm just so glad to have been able to do that. Yes, back there.
Is there anything that can be done at a state level about big tech or specifically Google suppression?
Can anything be done at a state level about big tech or Google suppression? Well, that's an interesting question, and I haven't thought about that because I don't know if anything can need to be done at the federal level, even though, you know, our own Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, among others, are trying to deal with that. I guess to the extent that if it's a government-owned or operated computer, you know, so to say, in public schools, public libraries, I'm just thinking out loud. Email me, okay, and then we can go back and forth on that. The answer is I just don't know, okay? Is that a problem? Are you finding that your Google searches, I see a lot of people nodding here. Your Google searches are being suppressed. People are not getting to you anymore on Google or Facebook or Twitter or other social media. Is that right? All the above? Is that, I've heard someone say all the above? Okay, so it's a problem. All right, please email me. In fact, multiple people email me. Yes, back there. Specialize in this. Is someone using them or somebody else that is able to overcome this? Raise your hand. Yes? No?
No.
No. Okay.
Can't afford to.
Okay. All right. So you're saying if you had more funding, you might be able to.
We're saying that we need legislation to keep ethical adoption in the forefront and not people from out of our state.
Okay.
Able to come in and take our business.
Okay. And I'll say when it comes to adoption, this gets more complicated. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
but this big technology is the problem.
Right. Okay. Finally, yes. All right, good. All right, questions, answers, comments, anything? All right, nothing. Hope you don't feel intimidated. Oh, somebody over here. Yes.
Is there any legislation to move Plan B to a prescription-based?
To move Plan B to a prescription-based, there was legislation that Senator Paul Whelan had, which would have basically prohibited Medicaid coverage, reimbursement, is what I'm trying to say, for Plan B, any abortifacient drug or device. And it failed, okay? And the short answer, it failed because you start getting into the area of contraception and birth control, and lawmakers are just like, well, hold on there, okay? And even though it's, you know, some of these things are clearly have an abortifacient action, or they can at certain times, IUDs as well, for instance, it's just a really difficult area. So it passed and then it failed. And it was part of the reason that we even had a special session is because the bill that it was attached to also failed. So the governor called a special session and that other bill passed, and we decided to go to defunding Planned Parenthood overall and get that passed the House and not the Senate. So the answer is no, and I don't think it would be successful, I'll just be honest with you. Okay? I don't even know if, you know, there are even some pro-lifers that I'm sure would just not necessarily support it. So, all right. Questions? Yes, back there. Yes, uh-huh.
It says that the Columbia Planned Parenthood is not licensed, and neither is the Kansas City. Not licensed, what does that mean?
They're not licensed as abortion facilities. Okay. They have not been for 2, 3 or more years. Yes. So we only have one licensed abortion facility. So the law requires that if you are an abortion facility, and we define that, it's any place, it could be a doctor's office, clinic, whatever, any place other than a hospital, where even one abortion is performed, has to be licensed as an abortion facility in Missouri, okay? We've only had one for the last 3 or more years. I think Kansas has been 4 years ago. Columbia was on and off to, I don't know, 2 years ago maybe, 2.5 years ago. So they're open, but they're not, and it can be open for, you know, all the other stuff that they do, but they're not licensed. So we have just one abortion facility in Missouri, okay? All right, yes, I'm sorry, this is taken directly from the department. This is DHSS, and there was a cover thing on the front which explained it, but I didn't copy that, so good question. Yeah. Anything else? Yes? No? Oh, back there, I'm sorry. Where's the other person?
Are hospital abortions ever going to be included?
Are hospital abortions ever going to ever be included in this handout that the department, or this report, the answer is no. Now, at the request of the department, we can get how many abortions are performed in hospitals each year, okay? They just don't publish that. They don't, when they do their annual statistics, which are abortions, which is separate from this, but they have vital statistics reports, which are births, deaths, marriages, divorces, all the vital statistics. It's very comprehensive. In fact, in previous years, that's what I've used, but I stopped using it because they weren't reporting Illinois. They were sort of speculating or hoping that they got the numbers right. So I was using the CDC. So we can get that. And the best way, if you want information like that, I'll tell you the best way. Here's a little secret. Call up your state rep, or even better, your state senator, especially if they're on one of the appropriations committees. Because, you know, they control the purse strings, and if they put in a request, you'll get an answer back more quickly. So, I would say from data I've seen in the past, the bulk of in-hospital abortions are at BJC, Barnes Jewish Hospital, in St. Louis, which of course is affiliated, associated with Washington University. There are the occasional abortions in maybe 5 or 8 other hospitals. I suspect those are life of the mother or serious health reasons. But BJC is a training hospital and they train people. people to do abortions. So that says something right there. All right?
So on the Colorado side, are these surgical abortions, or do they also include chemical?
Everything. Everything, okay? But if you look on, it's a good question, which will lead to this response. We have not had drug-induced chemical abortions in the state for about 2.5 to 3 years. Because Planned Parenthood in St. Louis stopped doing that, right? And the reason was just because of some legislation that we passed a couple years ago. In fact, I've got here, let's see if I can find it. This is from Planned Parenthood. I got on a Zoom meeting before I got kicked off, which had the director of Planned Parenthood in St. Louis. But I was able to get a screenshot. So maybe I'll include that. Marshall, I'll send this to you too. Missouri, this is from Planned Parenthood St. Louis. House Bill 126 and a Missouri Abortion Access. Missouri anti-choice politicians wrote a handbook on how to implement TRAP laws. TRAP is an acronym for, what is it? I forget what it is, but something has, it's not actually helpful. But a targeted regulation of abortion providers. That's what it's tracking. Okay. So this is basically the bottom is, as a result, Missouri has only one abortion clinic left. And why do they only have one abortion clinic left? Because your lawmakers that you elected passed a 72-hour mandated waiting period. They passed state-mandated medically inaccurate counseling, invasive and unnecessary pelvic exams. What they're talking about here is that in Missouri, if you before you undergo an abortion, regardless of the process, you have to have a pelvic exam because it causes pregnancy and all the other reasons, okay? Certain methods are contraindicated. And so they balked at doing this for drug-induced abortions. And so they stopped doing it. Parental consent, admitting privileges, of course, doctors still have to have admitting privileges at a hospital nearby. If they're going to do abortions here, burdens and standards related to physical plant, equipment, and staff, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why we're down to one abortion clinic and 46 abortions last year that we've been able to do that. Okay? I think my 5 minutes are up. Okay. All right. Thank you. Please email me ideas.